This is 9/11 Freefall.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 9/11 Freefall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. So CNBC's Ron Insana was on a radio show on the anniversary of September 11th this year, and he said that World Trade Center 7 was brought down in a controlled implosion. AE 9/11 Truth put out an article about that this week. Tonight we have Craig McKee on to discuss this issue. We'll also be talking about when John Kerry said a very similar thing a number of years ago. I'm going to play the Ron Insana clip from that radio show, and then the interview will begin after that. So that's coming your way right now.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the host on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
He's in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
Is that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, as if they had detonated.
Detonated.
They were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
We have explosive demolition at not only the Twin Towers, but also Building 7.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
You want to call your mother or something?
It's just a matter of time. That's all it is. It's a matter of time and the persistence of those who continue to adhere to it and push for it. And that's what we're doing.
Tune in to 9/11 Freefall, a show about 9/11 truth, 9/11 science, and the activists and scholars who are blowing the lid off the crime of the century. You can download episodes at 911freefall.com.
I don't remember, Ron, but right after 9/11, I would have to think that the markets were in shambles for a long time. No, I mean, that there had to be such insecurity around the world.
Well, yeah, and if we moved through that week, there were really serious questions about how badly Southern Manhattan was damaged and how physically the market could be reconstructed. Remember, there weren't really many redundant operations for the New York Stock Exchange, which was effectively shut down for a week. Until former Chairman Dick Grasso got together and he really led the effort to rebuild the physical infrastructure down there so that the market could reopen on Monday. I remember he called me Wednesday morning, the day after 9/11. He said, "When are you going to come down here and interview me?" And I said, "Listen, I can't get down there. I don't have proper credentials." I had actually lost my ID temporarily when I was down there on 9/11. So he sent a car for me. I went down there and did an interview with Dick on the floor of the exchange the next day. And
they were really hoping, by the way, they were hoping those buildings didn't crumble to the ground, but fell to the ground and take out all of those financial buildings, including the exchanges. Right?
Well, remember, Seven World Trade had not yet come down.
Right.
And so when I went down to the exchange that Wednesday morning, I was staying with some military and police officers, and we were looking over in that direction. And if it had come down in the way in which it was tilting, it would have wiped out everything from where it stood to Trinity Church to the exchange to effectively, you know, the mouth of the Hudson. And so there were still fears that if that building had fallen sideways, you were going to wipe out a good part of lower Manhattan. So they did manage, one, to take that down in a controlled implosion later on, and the exchange was up and running the following Monday.
I am joined today again by Craig McKee. Craig has been a journalist in Montreal, Canada for more than 30 years, having covered news and entertainment. He's won 8 provincial and national weekly newspaper awards. He's also the author at the blog Truth and Shadows, and he writes for AE 911 Truth. A very prolific writer and a lot to say, particularly on today's issue. Craig, welcome back to 911 Freefall.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me back on. Glad to be here.
So before we get into the latest news related to our mission, how have you been and how have things been going in terms of your writing and keeping the blog up at Truth and Shadows? I know it was taken down a while back, but it was restored.
Yeah, it was restored in January, and I have to say it's been pretty quiet for the last little while. I've actually been doing more stuff for AE in the writing area than I've done for my own blog for a little while. So the summer was, there were things I kind of worked on but never quite got all the way to the point of publishing, and I've got a whole bunch of things I want to do, but I think maybe the fall will give me renewed focus and energy to pump out some blog posts. So I'm hoping to do that. But yeah, it's been pretty quiet. And it's also, as we discussed, I think, on a previous show, the censorship wave that has hit the internet in recent times has certainly affected my blog. And the traffic that I get is not what it used to be because, thanks, I think, mainly to Google and their dishonest algorithms that basically try to suppress anything about 9/11 truth, and probably a lot of similar kind of topics that involve dissenting from the mainstream perspective. So I know I'm not the only one dealing with this, but certainly I feel more like when I write something now on the blog that I'm speaking to the choir more than reaching people outside of the truth movement. And there's nothing wrong with writing for the truth movement, but really my broader ambition for myself and for the movement is to reach outside the movement and to reach as many people as possible. So I think it's probably going to take a little bit of creativity to overcome some of this, what's the word I'm looking for here? Well, just kind of crushing of dissent, I guess, that seems to be going on. And I know it's going on in other vehicles, YouTube and other things like that, Twitter, I suppose. So it's been a little quiet for that, but I've been enjoying writing some stuff for AE. And also, I've actually had a couple of articles published in, I guess you would say, mainstream newspapers. Well, one's a newspaper and one's a magazine on 9/11 truth. So that was kind of encouraging. I don't know how many people listening will be familiar or will have heard about the Westview News, which is a monthly publication in Greenwich Village, New York. And it actually, they published a piece from the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry back several months ago, all about the grand jury petition. And recently, I wrote an article for them about the fire commissioner's resolution, the Franklin Square and Munson one, which calls for a new investigation into all aspects of 9/11 and also makes the extraordinary statement that all three towers were brought down with explosives. And they even say in there that it's, I know you guys have talked about this on the show before, but it's beyond any doubt, which is pretty striking. Anyway, so I wrote a piece for the Westview News about that subject. They ended up taking my article and my 500-word article and turning it into about a 200-word caption to go with a photo. But at least the gist was still in there. We still have a lot to overcome when it comes to getting any mention of the subject of 9/11 into mainstream media. But the second one that I did was a little bit better, was with a magazine in Canada called Common Ground. And it's a magazine that seems to have a very kind of activist bent, I guess, and it's been around since 1981. And so I did a piece in there that talked about some of the recent advances that the movement, and in particular AE 9/11 Truth, have made, including the fire resolution. That was kind of front and center, but also the Halsey report, the University of Alaska report that just came out that you guys have also covered, So I got an article in there, and they even have it's even pointed to on the cover. There's actually a picture of Building 7 on the cover of the September issue. So anyway, these are small things, but I guess they've been keeping me busy, I suppose.
No, there is no small things, especially when you're getting articles into corporate mainstream publications, even if they're not really corporate, even if it's an activist one. I remember when I was able to get a 9/11 Truth article into, I think it was Chicos e Famosos in Brazil, and I had to rely on somebody translating it for me, but it had a very good article. It was either Chicos e Famosos or it was, the name? Uma. I think it was Uma, actually. I don't remember. I have it somewhere. I had another article on Chicos e Famosos, but that was on Iran or something, but the fact that you can get it anywhere and just slide in through the cracks of any publication that's willing to cover this, I think, is great.
I'll throw in one last comment, which is that it was kind of fun, in a way, to actually have something in a print publication for a change. You know, that's used to be exclusively where I would be found. And then, of course, we have the internet and we have blogs and... And so I can't even remember the last time that I had something that was actually printed in a newspaper or in a magazine. And both of those publications can be found online, and both of them produce print editions. So anyway, just throw that in.
Yeah, in about 30 years, you're going to have a bunch of teenagers holding a book or a magazine saying, "What do I do with this?" But just the way things are going. Even me, I listen to books now more than I read them. It's just more convenient, and I usually save it when I got big driving trips. Mm. So let's get to the topic here for today, because this is pretty big here in the truth movement. We had a supporter contact us who somehow, just the right set of circumstances, was listening to this particular show, Bernie and Sid, in the morning. It's in New York, 77 WABC Radio. And they had Ron and Santa on the show. Ron and Santa is a commentator, anchor on CNBC, was, and I believe he still has some kind of presence on there. Somebody that is put on TV, the establishment society says that we need to listen to these people on television, that they're the final authority on what truth is. I played the clip before the interview, but I'm going to just quickly go over the exact quote from the article that we transcribed the quote into the article. This is what Ron and Santa says when he was talking about his 9/11 experience. He said, "Well, remember, 7 World Trade Center had not yet come down. And so when I went down to the exchange that Wednesday morning," he's talking about 9/12, "I was standing with some military and police officers, and we were looking over in that direction. And if it had come down in the way in which it was tilting, it would have wiped out everything from where it stood to Trinity Church to the exchange to effectively, you know, the mouth of the Hudson. And so there were still fears that if that building had fallen sideways, you were going to wipe out a good part of lower Manhattan. So they did manage, for one, to take that down in a controlled implosion later on. And the exchange was up and running the following Monday." So some people are getting a little confused by his timeline. I wasn't, but there's been a couple of people who I've encountered that were confused, because he's telling a story about going down there on Wednesday, but he sort of flashes back to the previous day. And of course, 7 World Trade Center didn't exist on 9/12 because it was lying in rubble. But this is kind of how people talk. You know, their brains flash between two separate things. He's talking about that morning, but he's kind of flashing back. So he's definitely talking about Building 7 being brought down in a controlled implosion. And he's saying it very matter-of-factly, with some authority, as casually, "Yeah, I just, the sky is blue, the grass is green, and this is just the way it is. Like, there's no question about it whatsoever." So let's talk about it. As of this recording, of course, this article has gone out, and that's about where it stands. We don't know Insana's response to his gaffe. I don't know what you call this. But what's your reaction to this, Craig?
Well, I guess it's funny that we refer to something, and I get why, but we refer to sort of a moment of unexpected honesty as a gaffe, right? And I'm sure on his end, that's exactly, how it would seem, I guess. To us, it's like, wow, he he told us what actually happened. I think it's extremely unlikely that he would get this detail wrong. You know, it seems very clear that what he's describing, and I agree with you about the timeline, especially, it's funny, I've read this quote a few times, but I just read it before we came on today, and I think it was clearer to me this time that he was talking about going down there on the 12th, and then he kind of, without explaining it very well, he sort of talked about or what had happened the day before. So he didn't actually claim that, he wasn't actually claiming that the building came down on the 12th. But it seems clear that he heard from someone that that building was going to be brought down. That seems pretty clear. And the reason why I think that's, you know, that's not just a mistake on his part or a slip or he didn't get confused, because so many other people said the same thing. You know, there are many people who have been quoted as saying that, you know, yeah, we knew the building was going to come down. We knew that, you know, they were going to have to, you know, use, you know, demolish the building. And I think about, I'm sure you remember this, Andy, but one presentation that really made an impression on me when I first saw it, and I just watched it again yesterday to kind of refresh my memory, was the one that Graham McQueen did. And I think it was back in 2011, something around there. And he talked about foreknowledge with respect to Building 7. And he laid out the case for the overwhelming case for why it was apparent that there was plenty of foreknowledge, that all kinds of people not only knew that it was going to come down, but, you know, within kind of had a good idea of when it was going to come down. And even to the point he mentions, even to the point of them figuring out what kind of perimeter that they needed to keep people outside of in order to keep them from being, I guess, hit by debris or hit by the cloud or whatever. So it appears that there was just overwhelming evidence that people down there knew this was going to happen, and in some cases for hours beforehand. And I really got a kick out of watching again his assessment of the CNN coverage, because we remember so well the Jane Stanley episode where she's standing, she's on camera, and she's speaking to the host back in London, and he's saying that, you know, we've just heard that the Salomon Brothers building, which is Building 7, which was Building 7, has collapsed. You know, do you have any details, Jane? And of course, the first thing that makes me chuckle at that is that Jane has no clue about anything. She doesn't know anything about Building 7. So she kind of mumbles around about, you know, there's a sense of people not knowing what's going on. And of course, the whole time she's talking, there's Building 7 right over her shoulder. It has not collapsed, and it ended up being about 25 minutes before it did. So that's well known by the truth movement. And of course, the BBC's denied that they were in on anything. But what's interesting is that CNN was talking about Building 7 and showing it on their screen for well over an hour with, you know, comments, with the graphics on the screen saying, you know, that Building 7 may collapse. Then later on, as it got closer to the time, they changed that to it's that the building is ablaze and poised to collapse. And then, like, a minute and a half before it actually came down, they changed the graphic to on the verge of collapse. So it really, and the whole time, of course, the building, you know, whole time they're talking about this, about the fact that it's, like when he first came on, he said the building is collapsing or has collapsed. And of course, it was also on the screen right behind him the whole time. So there's plenty of indication that people knew very specifically that it was going to come down. And what the point that McQueen makes that I find really worthwhile is that the explanation that NIST gives for why Building 7 came down depends on a series of unpredictable and random events that really nobody could have foreseen, you know, a whole sequence of events that would have had to happen for their theory to be true. So so the fact that Insana is saying this, it just sounds like one more person who is confirming this fact. But what makes it really dramatic to me is, first of all, you know, he's a well-known figure. He's on MSNBC, and he's you know, well-known. I guess he's more of a financial commentator, an analyst. But the fact that he's prominent and he's still saying this 18 years later is what strikes me, you know, because it's one thing for people to say that on the day, because a lot of people, the official story hadn't been firmed up necessarily very early. So a lot of people were, you know, like Dan Rather saying it looked like a controlled demolition. You know, later on, he wasn't saying that. So that's what strikes me about this comment, is that he's still saying it all these years later without seeming to realize the implication of what he's saying. And the radio interview that he did, Bernie and Sid, I guess, show at WABC, the host, obviously, it went right over the host's head because he didn't question it at all. And you'd think that that would, you know, that an alarm bell would go off if somebody came up with a story that the building was demolished because it was unstable. So it's pretty dramatic on a lot of fronts. And I imagine that he will avoid any further comment on this, I would guess. What do you think?
There's a couple of things. I mean, yes, you are right about all the foreknowledge. About people saying the building is going to blow up. I mean, you don't expect buildings that catch on fire to actually blow up unless you have some kind of explosive inside or explosive material that you're worried about, if it's things like that. But it amazes me because of the matter-of-fact way that Insana says this. And we don't know based on what he's saying this yet. We're going to get into some of that. But it reminds me of a scenario where you have a pet cat and you're trying to hide it from your landlady, and maybe you are successfully able to hide it for 3 years. The cat has no idea that he's not allowed in that apartment. He just kind of blissfully goes about his life and doesn't realize why he's shoved in the closet every time the landlady appears. And this just seems to be the point at which the cat meows while the landlady is within earshot. I mean, it goes over the head of the host. The host may not realize that there is a controversy around this. I mean, for us to actually get this clip, it's like the perfect storm of an AE supporter not only existing within the range of this radio show that is not very well known as far as I know, listening and paying attention, because a lot of times radio is just background noise, listening and paying attention at the moment that Ron Insana says this. So it makes me wonder what else is being let out in the airwaves around America that we are not catching. That's why our supporters are so important. I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke when I say that, because I wasn't listening to this program on that day. I can't monitor all media and see what gets said out there. So if you hear something, see something, say something. All right, same rule applies for the 9/11 Truth Movement. Send it to us, and if it is valid, we will certainly use it. I mean, when the supporter told me about this, I think I gasped audibly just hearing his description.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible that he just doesn't realize that there is a controversy around this, and he just says that, it was controlled demolition, and hasn't thought about the fact that you can't rig that in a day, that you can't rig it without knowing 9/11 is going to happen to begin with, that he has just kind of accepted that and moved on and blissfully gone about these 18 years and says it so matter-of-factly? I mean, is it possible that he does not know there's a controversy around this, and that the position that he can validate that is the one that is demonized by the establishment that he represents when he goes on television?
Well, I would have to conclude that you're right, that he doesn't realize there's a controversy, because I'm thinking, if he did realize it, why would he say that? Why, if he knew better, if he knew that exactly what the official story is, why wouldn't he just keep it vaguer than that? Why would he recount that story at all? So I think you're probably right. I find it incredible that, you know, a fairly prominent media figure could be that, could have been at the scene and had a firsthand experience with what happened, and yet know surprisingly little about the details later on. It's kind of shocking, but I guess we in the truth movement, you know, we kind of immerse ourselves in this stuff. So it always sort of strikes me as surprising when somebody doesn't know even the most basic, you know, facts about the event, and especially a major media figure. So I have to assume that he just made this comment innocently. I want to mention there's an interview he did, I think it was actually on 9/11 itself, with Tom Brokaw on NBC television. And he doesn't talk about Building 7 in that brief interview. He just talks about the fact that he'd heard that the towers had been hit, so he hopped in a cab and went downtown, and he managed to find a parked car that was unlocked that he could hide in, which is pretty amazing. But he talks about the Twin Towers, and he talks about the fact that he was in the area when the South Tower came down. And he says the top began to blow out like an implosion in that interview. Now, blowing out like an implosion sounds a bit contradictory, but he made the point that it blew out, which supports the controlled demolition idea. And when he says like an implosion, I mean, that just, I guess, just adds him to all the other voices of on-air people who made that comparison on 9/11, sort of without knowing what the implications were of them explaining that that impression that they had.
Right. Now, I can already see what the other side is going to try to say, and they're going to say that, well, okay, he said this, but he just thought it was, he doesn't really know anything, nobody told him anything. I mean, if he's getting any kind of reprogramming done from his bosses, from maybe some other entity, he may clam up, he may come out and say, oh, I just assumed it was, it sort of looked like one. But even if that is the case, whether true or not, but let's say it is, the fact that we have this prominent anchor on CNBC instinctively, intuitively, watching Building 7 come down, maybe on a video later on, or maybe he saw it happen on that day, and have thought all these years it was a controlled demolition and not even question it, is still big. I mean, because it shows that even these corporate media people that we're told that we need to listen to, if they don't know there's a controversy, that their job could be threatened if they take an opinion on this that doesn't jive with the official story, if they don't know this, they will come out and say, just like all those people in the YouGov survey, that it looks like a controlled demolition. That's because it was.
Absolutely. That's kind of what we have to hope for happening as often as possible, that people will blurt these things out without kind of realizing what they're saying, because it's really obvious that they're not going to say it. If they know what the repercussions are going to be, they're going to choose their careers before they, you know, talk honestly about this. So we kind of have to count on people that are going to innocently tell us details of what they experienced.
I would love to be a fly on the wall, or at least a fly in the skull of Ron and Santa right now, because once this article came out, again, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but if it comes back to them, if there's any kind of fallout from it, then I mean, I would wonder if I was in his position. I've gone for 18 years thinking Building 7 was a controlled demolition, not thinking about it much. Maybe I got some insider knowledge, or maybe I just thought it. But being told now the official story is fire and now don't delineate from that official story, I would have to be wondering, what is going on here? Why can't we just say what it is, or why can't we get to the bottom of it? So I wonder now if for Mr. Ron and Santa, the whole 9/11 truth issue is suddenly being presented to him, and what that does for him personally, realizing that he stepped in it without intending to and gave fire to people like us who have been challenging NIST story for years.
Well, it may well do that. It may well cause him to question why this story, this official story, has to be maintained by these people. It still kind of blows my mind, though, that he could kind of be so innocent all this time later. It's one of the most interesting subjects, I find, to contemplate how these mainstream media people can be convinced to follow this party line, you know, so completely. Some of them, I think, know a lot more than they're letting on, and they just know that they better not go there. I think a lot of them know that. And I think it's also, you know, people who rise to the level of being a network anchor, I think they're already indoctrinated. They're already on the right, you know, on the right page with the official story, or they wouldn't rise to that level. So you've got people that are, you know, they're not exactly rebellious. They're not rebelling against their employers once they get to be Anderson Cooper or somebody like that. So, you know, and I might have told this story, I think I did on your show before, but I know a journalist who worked for the main English daily paper in my city of Montreal. For years, he had to be very, very delicate about trying to get anything related to 9/11 to be printed. And, you know, we're talking about a daily paper, but we're not talking about, you know, one with the influence that the New York Times has or the Washington Post. So it's not like all the people at that paper would be household names across North America. And yet, even at that level, and much lower levels of media levels, it would just be understood that you don't go there. And I think it's also fascinating to watch people who have really nothing to gain or lose on the 9/11 front, who are completely convinced by this whole idea that conspiracy theorists are crazy and we should make fun of them and laugh at them and avoid interacting with them about the evidence. So it happens right from, you know, the guy that lives next door to you all the way up to a host on CNN. But I guess the ones on CNN, they have a lot more to lose, I guess, because they have very high-paying, cushy jobs. But, yeah, Insana, I mean, if he's confronted, I would love to see how he deals with it. Clearly he wasn't confronted on that show.
I think, partly, and this gets a little more philosophical, I think part of it is ambition. The dangers of ambition in this country is that truth is discarded. I mean, you know, to get on CNN or get on Fox News or whatever, I mean, it's not my dream, but it is for somebody out there. Somebody grew up watching it. Somebody had this series of experiences that wanted to get them in front of that camera or to be writing for the New York Times. And of course, somebody is going to get it. That is how it works. You know, there's going to be winners and losers. And the winners typically, and this is my view, are not rewarded for their great journalistic abilities. I mean, maybe they expose something that is not so controversial that it's one of these issues that's taboo, like 9/11. So they get there, they have something to defend, and you begin to compromise. And I really think a lot of what we see, especially on television, are people who are just filling a role. Because you have to. You have to be just filling a role to regurgitate the same message from station to station. I mean, people are all different.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we got 300 million in the United States alone. You're going to have varying opinions. You're not going to have this kind of uniformity unless it's coming down from the top. Now, when you have someone like myself, you know, I didn't dream of being a podcast host. This just sort of happened because there was a need and circumstances and whatnot. And if we get a new investigation and 9/11 is exposed, I will disappear overnight and be happy to do it. Right? But there's people who actually want to just do this until they're old. And yeah, they will go along with whatever they're told because they want to protect that. It's not based on principle. Now, I want to, well, before we get to the next thing, I want to ask you, because you are a journalist, you got experience, do you think that Mr. Insana will have any repercussions, and do you think there will be any repercussions on the journalistic community seeing the example that may be set from this? I know it's speculation, but let's do a little forecasting. What do you think could happen?
My guess would be that anything that happens will be invisible to us. He may well be spoken to by someone who may tell him, look, you stuck your toe into a very delicate area there, and we don't want you to do it again. I mean, in some form, you know, I'm not saying he's going to get a visit from the CIA necessarily, but somebody, I think, will probably say, you know, watch out for that. I don't think he's going to get fired. I don't think any of that kind of stuff's going to happen, because frankly, that would call more attention to it, and that would shine a light on what happened. I think he's probably just going to avoid talking about it again, about that aspect of it. And frankly, and what's interesting too, if you listen to the interview, he wasn't really looking to bring this up. It was because he was asked by the interviewer specifically about, you know, damage to the area and the possibility that, you know, that the stock exchange would be crushed under the weight of, you know, falling buildings. So this interview could very easily have gone by with just him telling his regular story about hiding in a car and all of that. So maybe that's probably one reason why he shared this honestly, was because he wasn't really anticipating the question. So he just recounted what he remembered from that day based on the question. So I don't think we'll see any repercussions, but I'm betting he never says this again.
We will see. I would like him to stick to his story. I mean, that's a pipe dream, but that would be...
I would too.
Yeah, I mean, that would make life particularly interesting, especially for us here. And I would stand by him. I don't care that he's on CNBC and that the corporate media has been typically antagonistic of us. I will stand by him. I do not want him to get fired. I do not want anything bad to happen to Mr. Insana. I want him to tell his story and be free to do that and maybe tell us a little bit more information and clarify why he said that. Is that based on some kind of insider knowledge that somebody told him there on the scene, or is that just something that he assumed when he saw the building fall? Let's get some clarity here. Let's get at the truth. Now, a similar thing happened a while back, and I don't have the exact year this happened, but it was, I think, in the late aughties of 2000, aughties being the zeros, 08, 09, 10. Couldn't lock down a date. This is John...
Never heard that before.
I actually had to look this up when the millennium came because I didn't know what to call it, the zeros. And apparently in 1900, they called them the oddies, according to some article I read somewhere or another. But this is John Kerry. He was at an event, and he was approached by Austin We Are Change. It's a one-minute clip. I'm going to go ahead and play it.
I'll take a look at this.
Okay.
I'd be happy to take a look at this.
Also, a question I have for you. World Trade Center 7 was brought down on September 11th at 5:20 in the evening. The leaseholder of the World Trade Center complex, Larry Silverstein, gave a public interview on PBS in 2002, and he said that they pulled that building, which is a demolition term for intentionally bringing down the building. This man made over $5 billion from those buildings' destruction, and I want to know if there was ever a formal investigation into Larry Silverstein, the leaseholder of the World Trade Center complex, and his ties to this entire event.
I don't believe there's been a formal investigation. I haven't heard that. I don't know that. I do know that that wall, I remember, was in danger, and I think that they made a decision based on the danger that it had of destroying other things, that they did it in a controlled fashion.
What's your take on that, Craig?
Well, if I heard the ending was the hardest for me to hear. He said, did he say it was... brought down in a controlled fashion? Was those the words I
said? He said that they were concerned about the wall and he's speaking very vaguely about it. He's not given as many specifics as even Insana, but it sounds very similar to Insana's story, that they were worried about a side of the building, probably the damaged side, even though NIST has admitted that that had nothing to do with initiating the collapse. He says, I think it was brought down in a controlled fashion. Now, let's remember that this isn't just some random dude. This is the guy who theoretically could have been president in 2004 when he ran against Bush. He's a senator. He's been in presidential cabinets. He's still very involved in things that go on here in this country. So when he says something, it has weight to it. And he says, I think they brought it down in a controlled fashion. So what do you think about that, Craig?
Well, I think it's further confirmation that this was known by a lot of people, journalists, politicians, and firefighters and first responders and just people in the area. It seems really obvious that people knew that this was going to be the outcome of the day for that building, that it was going to come down. We've got the video, which probably most people have seen, where the it appears, I guess it's a firefighter saying, you know, that everybody move back, that building's going to blow up. Another one says the building's coming down. So, you know, as the Graham McLean presentation makes really obvious, there was plenty of foreknowledge of this, plenty of detailed foreknowledge. And the fact that Kerry is saying that, I mean, on one level, it's inexplicable, because who should be better acquainted with the party line than somebody of his stature? The idea that he would even say that, it strikes me as something similar to the Insana thing. It's like he kind of was hit by a question that he wasn't expecting, wasn't really, you know, used to getting, maybe. And so he answered, you know, he let a little nugget of truth slip out there. I don't know how else to interpret it than that. It just seems like further confirmation of the fact that a lot of people knew that building was going to be brought down on that day. It's just incredible that it's somebody like him saying it.
And of course, same thing here. The other side is going to say, well, he was confused. But the fact that you have somebody that could have been president in 2004, instinctively believing it's a controlled demolition because he either saw a video or he saw it as it happened, whatever, lends more credibility to our need for a new investigation. These are prominent voices out there. People were told are prominent, giving us credibility because they say these things. It never gets said again. Now, what's interesting is I remember this coming out, and it was shortly after I was waking up to 9/11. I was fully immersed in it. There were some that incorrectly published articles saying, John Kerry admits 9/11's an inside job. No, he didn't say that. He said that it was brought down in a controlled fashion. So you got to be very careful and be accurate in what's being said. It's still significant. It doesn't diminish the significance of it. But there were some articles and YouTube circulated, and then the story was sort of forgotten for all these years from what I have seen. And now we've got an opportunity to highlight this again. I think we need to do more highlighting of these things when they come out. So again, if you're a supporter out there, yes, you catch something, see something, say something. We're not omnipresent. We don't know everything that's going on in the world here. You see something, you can definitely contact us and let us know. I want to throw something out there, Craig, because I was thinking about this yesterday. All right, I'm going to do a hypothetical. I do this sometimes to make a point. And when I do it, I give the other side of this eternal debate of 9/11 many givens. I give them some things that they would want to hear from us. Doesn't mean that I agree with this necessarily or that the evidence actually shows it. But just for argument's sake, let's say that this scenario that Insana and Kerry are sort of collectively telling us, let's say that it's true, that whoever was in charge of the scene that day was worried that Building 7 was going to fall onto other buildings, that there was a legitimate concern of this. including the stock exchange, and that they brought it down to keep that from happening, to keep it from causing further havoc in downtown New York that day, to keep the stock market open and keep the stock market from plunging as a result. If that's all there is to any of this stuff, to any of the questions surrounding 9/11, and if entities in the government somehow have this technology to bring a building down in a day, well, with a huge terrorist attack going on next door, why can't they just admit it? I mean, officially, nobody died in Building 7, officially. Why not just simply say this was a controlled demolition and they did this for that reason, to protect other buildings, to keep the stock market from plummeting and people from losing money, which causes insecurity in the country? And if it was really just Building 7 that was brought down in a controlled demolition, and if it was done for a practical reason, then I think most Americans might nod their head and say, okay, if given that reason, I can understand why they did that. Then what's the need for all the secrecy? And I say this because Insana and Carrie might really believe this story that they were told of why it came down. I mean, assuming that they were told it, right? And that there was nothing further to Building 7 coming down than to just control where it came down. So why doesn't our government just acknowledge this from day one? Why not acknowledge that now, since there's so many questions? I ask this to any skeptical people listening. I ask this to any government officials who may come across this podcast. Why not just come out and say we brought the building down to protect the stock market? I mean, I think if this was as nefarious as I do believe it is, I think they screwed up by not just admitting Building 7 was a controlled demo from day one. We probably wouldn't be here on this podcast. It'd be a lot harder to make people more passionate about this without that obvious smoking gun. But why not just come out now, especially with the study, and just say, okay, look, this was the reason we did it. And they were right on Building 7, and we're going to move on with life. I want your thoughts on that pondering from me, Craig.
Well, yeah, there's two things. Why didn't they do it originally, and then why don't they do it now? I think it's too late for them to do it now, because it would tell everybody, yeah, for the last 18 years we've been telling you a story. And really, we had all the information that we needed to tell you the truth, which was that we blew the building up. So I think the chances that they're going to say it now are zero. And I think that they're not even going to want to acknowledge the study. So they're not. I don't think they're going to make an admission in as a reaction to the study, because if they did that, in their view, it would legitimize it. It would make it something that we really have to look at. And that's not something they want. They'd rather ignore something like that and pretend it doesn't exist, kind of the way the media generally does with 9/11 truth entirely. They just ignore it, or they ridicule it. They really don't they don't deal with it in a serious way. Now, why didn't they do this in the first place? I think it would have just opened up too many questions, and it would have it couldn't have been made convincingly, this case, because there's no way you can rig a building in a single day. And frankly, even if they claimed that they had, well, then the questions would start about, well, how was this done? When was it done? When did people go in the building? Because the firefighters were removed from the building, if I'm not mistaken, before noon on that day. It's certainly many hours before the building came down. So if they're removing all the firefighters because it's dangerous, then are they going to be sending in a demolition crew that's going to somehow whip together a demolition that's going to happen the same afternoon? It's so impossible and so absurd that I think they'd rather not open that can of worms, where people could quite legitimately, and even non-truthers would hear that story and would scratch their heads and go, how the heck did they do that so fast? You know, and when did they do it? I mean, the building, if you listen to Barry Jennings' account, the building was completely empty when he and And Hess went in there in the morning. So if they were in the building and it was empty up until the time they're supposed to have left, which was, you know, 9:30 or something like that, and then all the firefighters are out before noon, well, when did this demolition, when was this rigged? So I guess I'm just thinking that they would rather come up with a technical explanation that is complete nonsense, but that the average person is never going to really, you know, how many average people have read the NIST report, you know, and been in a position where they can say, well, this doesn't make sense. It's a lot easier to say, wait a minute, there's no way you can demolish a building in a day. So I think the chances that they're going to acknowledge this are just, they're zero. And occasionally, because it's true, not that it was rigged in a day, but that it was demolished, because it's true, you're going to get people that are going to let this slip from time to time. You know, probably, you know, innocently in the case of Insana, I don't see why he would say it if he knew what the implications were. So I just think it's too far, too tall a tale, I think, for people to have bought, even back in the day.
Hey, come on, Craig, if it was a demolition, somebody would have talked. Maybe two people would have talked, you know?
But they did talk, Andy. They did talk. A whole bunch of them.
Exactly.
A whole bunch of them.
And it's responded to by a terrified silence from the rest of the media.
Yes. Yeah. They know what they're not supposed to talk about.
Okay, so I wanted to say this, too. I mean, this is just one case, and this was a corporate media guy, but there were firefighters telling people to get back. The building's about to blow up. There are witnesses on the scene. There's somebody that does know. It's been 18 years. If you do have information, I want to just put out this plea to anybody who might be following us, have information on this, might be scared of coming forward. I do my utmost to protect people, and I'm a gentleman, I'm a man of my word. If you tell me not to identify you, if you tell me not to tell a single soul, I will not do that. The last thing I want to do is sell someone out for a quick headline, but there's information that could be helpful to us and our mission and following certain leads and whatnot. So if you are out there and you have real information, especially if you can prove it, I want to hear it, and you can contact us, and maybe I'll even try to figure out some way to set up a way that you could do it anonymously, because even if we can't run with it and go with it publicly, if one person says something and another person says something and maybe a common name comes up or a common element of the story, you start getting a picture of what happened. So please, come forward. The time is now, and I will do my very best to protect your anonymity. But Craig, do you have advice for the other citizen journalists out there who are listening now on how to follow up on this issue or other ones related to 9/11? Because there's got to be people who know more, like I said, and they need to be talked to. And citizen journalists need to get out there and do it. We're not omnipresent. You know, we got certain limitations in terms of budget to fly out to New York City and do this. What advice do you give to the people who want to follow up on accounts like this or similar accounts that come out?
Yeah, that's a good question. As far as citizen journalists go, I think we all need to work. We all need to be working on this kind of collectively, to find any angle that we haven't explored, find any witness that could have information like this. And, you know, it's not easy because, like you said, we can't all just be in New York City. But I think we need to be looking at every possible avenue that we can find to open up the cracks in this case wider. And that could be, you know, freedom of information requests. It could be getting on the phone and calling up Ron Insana. I'm not urging people to do that one at a time, because that probably would be, it could be counterproductive, I guess. It would be good to kind of get them to comment in some way before, you know, a bunch of people would call him, because then he would just shut down. But I don't know if there's a single simple answer for that about what we can do. It's just, we need to be doing all of it. We need to be doing everything we can think of. And keeping the pressure on. That's why I really appreciate what, you know, when I look at, you know, the release of the University of Alaska study you know, that's happening while the fire commissioner's resolution is happening, and hopefully that's going to spread to other fire departments. And, you know, I guess we just need to be kind of firing on all fronts. And, you know, in terms of this is a tricky one. You know, I think firefighters have been told to keep their mouths shut about, you know, I'm talking about the fire department of New York, not the ones in the surrounding communities, but you know, they're not supposed to talk about what they saw. But we do have look at what McQueen did with reading all of those oral histories of the firefighters, and look at, not only did he get all the stuff about foreknowledge, but he also got just all this evidence that firefighters on the scene witnessed explosions, which they described not as loud noises made by things that you would expect in a fire, but that they were explosives of some kind. So that's an example of something that somebody could do and did do, was to take that material, and that had to be a long job to do that, 10,000 pages. So one thing we don't need to do, and unfortunately I see this a lot on social media, is kind of endlessly argue about the same few points. It's really a waste of time. We really need to sort of be thinking about how do we reach beyond our own community. And I think the focus needs to be on what is wrong with the official story, not focusing on areas that people in the movement think are correct in the official story. We need to be challenging everything in every way we can think to do it.
Anonymity is a good thing. If you're not pushing to be some kind of superstar in the movement, you can actually be more of a danger to the establishment as a ninja than as an action hero. So, you know, get the information, and we always take tips. You know, we're not going to just run with everything people tell us, because some of them might be exaggerated or lying, but if there's something you can back up, some account or somebody that we need to talk to, we will take it, and you will be a big help to the movement. Just do whatever you can to push us towards the end of this and put this in the history books, because those buildings were brought down in controlled demolitions that day. Craig, we are out of time. Thank you so much for your work with us, and thank you for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today.
Thanks for having me again, Andy. Appreciate it.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele saying, have a great week and good luck.